Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
So we were talking the other day to Chris Heath for a very good chat, Word in Your Attic and so forth. And Chris was talking about Jonathan Richman, which made us think, Jonathan Richman, there's a good person to get as a guest on one of our little
new record
podcasts, whatever.
He's going to leap at it.
Fabulous
publicity opportunity.
And so.
We are so naive, aren't we?
Tell us what happened, Mark.
Well, you and I have both, we'll get on to this in a minute, but you and I have both got experience of how gorgeously eccentric this fellow is. I got a hold of his PR in America, Blue Arrow Records, and I wrote her an email and explained what was involved. I've got it in front of me here. She says, "Dear Mark, this is Debbie. She says, thank you so much for your invitation. I will let Jonathan know that you reached out, he consciously does not use the internet, computer, or a cell phone, three dots. So I can safely say it's just not for him. Sincerely, Debbie." And I wrote back and I said, look, that's just to be applauded, really.
It is, absolutely.
Absolutely admirable. I was thinking immediately, I made this mental calculation as to how much more time I would have every day if I didn't use the internet, a computer, or a cell phone. Dave, it would be months per year.
It's fantastic.
I could go off and learn an exotic and complicated instrument. I could learn, Sanskrit, whatever.
All Jonathan's eccentricities have been borne out by experience one way or another, haven't they? He was the first person I ever knew. And this would be 76, 77.
Yeah.
I was working for his record company and they said, we're going out for dinner with Jonathan. And he's chosen the place we're going to go. We're going to go to a macrobiotic vegetarian restaurant. And we just looked at each other in 1976.
Said, what's that?
Bloody hell is that?
Is that a radish then? Is it, what do we get? It's just a piece of celery.
Nowadays, you just wouldn't bat an eyelid at all, would you?
No.
And Jonathan was the person who, when he came over at that time, played effectively acoustically. Because he used to say, to the great hilarity of your response, he used to say that I don't want the little children hurting their ears. Yep. And now we're parents and grandparents. We think, yeah, absolutely. Everybody's grown up deaf because they're assailed by overly loud music absolutely all the time. And of course, that was before the advent of the Walkman. Let alone the iPhone and the iPod and so forth. So he's been proved right in lots of things. Jonathan kind of put a stake in the ground in about 1975, and he hasn't really shifted from it.
Ahead of the game. He was ahead of the game in terms of fitness, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Running, I think. Didn't you say that he once walked from Heathrow Airport?
He ran from Heathrow Airport to Kingston. yes,
to Kingston. It's yeah. incredible. Isn't
he it? Was, you know, he was absolutely one of a kind. And as we were saying to Chris Heath when we were talking about it, because Chris had chosen a new record by Jonathan as his best record ever made or whatever. And we were saying, you know, throughout the years, you listen to Jonathan Richman records, whether they're Roadrunner or Hospital or Egyptian Reggae or Morning of Our Lives or You're Crazy for Taking the Bus or, you know, the things he had on, what was the film that he had, you know, the Cameron Diaz film, I can't remember. You know, all the stuff you've heard.
Yes, that he appears in, doesn't he? That's right.
All the stuff you've heard all throughout the years. Every time you've been gripped by a Jonathan Richman record, and you have regularly during that time, you've been aware of the fact that there is nothing like this man. There's nothing even remotely like this man.
No, nothing before or after. No. It's one of those very rare cases. If you don't know where he came from and you don't know anybody who has obviously been influenced by him, although clearly they have, but they don't sound anything like him. I've told you my one encounter with Jonathan Richman, I think, haven't I?
Go on.
You know, the Shepherd's Bush Empire. I went with my eldest son, who's a massive fan. This must have been about, maybe about 10 years ago or something. And we went along, and I knew the PR. And the PR said, do you want to meet Jonathan? He said, God, we would absolutely love to. So we were taken into this dressing room afterwards, and I assumed it would be just rammed with kind of glad handers and well-wishers and people eating the rider and drinking booze. And completely silent. And in the corner, there was only one person in there. And it was Jonathan Richman. And he was sitting there in the kind of half light, very low light. And he had in front of him some musical sheets. And he was writing actual music. He was writing, you know, quavers and crotchets and minims onto staves on this music in pencil, and then rubbing out with the rubber and rewrite. And I came in, I said, Jonathan, I don't want to, you know, interrupt. I see you busy. And he got a piece of paper, he wrote on it. He said, I'm saving my voice because I'm on tour. So yeah. I'm only responding in writing. And he handed this piece of paper. It was perfectly friendly. It wasn't like, I don't want to be disturbed, you know. No. And Tommy and I had this really extraordinary exchange with him, which probably only lasted about 5 minutes because there's only so long you could sit in the room writing the answer.
Yes, it gets a bit tiring.
We sort of said, you know, nothing more than kind of, we really enjoyed the show. And, you know, I don't know, we asked something about his acoustic guitar. He has that amazing guitar. And he plays without a strap, which is so extraordinary. It's just to make life even more complicated.
Even more difficult. Yes.
It's even more difficult. So he waves it around. He uses it as a kind of an instrument, part of a stage prop, really, but it's very hard to play. And we had this extraordinary little exchange with him, and then out we went, and that was it. And that's exactly how I wanted him to be.
Absolutely. Never a disappointment at all, Jonathan, throughout the years. Long may he reign. We were talking last week about my theory that no girls ever screamed at any musician who has facial hair. You know, which has been greeted with widespread approval, really, as a theory. Somebody just asked me, and I can't remember who it was, said, have the Rolling Stones ever had facial hair? And he didn't think they had. But go on. Go.
Well, yeah, Mick Jagger did briefly. Sir. Okay. Yes, sir. Mick Jagger did, or was it just in Ned Kelly? And was it?
But this is what I was going to say. Mick Jagger had a fine, luxuriant, almost ZZ Top standard of beard, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
When he was appearing in the film Ned Kelly in 1970, I think. Yeah. But I've got a feeling he wore the beard later on, although I don't know if he actually wore it in the Rolling Stones. I suppose that would be the clincher question.
Really. I have a mental image of him with a beard, but probably not on stage, because on stage, with a beard, would he be Mick Jagger?
No, he wouldn't. He's a chin music concept, isn't he? As Alex was saying last week.
Yeah.
Then again, Charlie Watts did have a mustache, didn't he? He had a kind of
a wildly successful one, actually.
No, it was a kind of Chinese detective type mustache, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I somehow had a feeling that Bill Wyman had a mustache, but then I couldn't place it at all. No. And I thought to myself, surely Ron would have had it from time to time. I mean, Mick Taylor possibly would have had one at some point. You get the feeling he would have had, but anyway,
You know, you're right. Should we also say on the Stones tip, what a monstrous travesty their stamps are. Have you seen this collection of stamps?
It's post office stamps, isn't it? Royal Mail stamps. They're official Rolling Stone stamps. And tell everybody what's wrong with them.
Well, what's wrong? I don't know where to start. I mean, this is obviously a big revenue for the Royal Mail. They're pumping out stamps about absolutely anybody, you know. And they're always high denomination. You know, the one you want is first class, but there was always the £1.75 one. I know this because I went to try and buy some. And then I thought, why am I buying these things? And I had another look at them. And there are eight of them. Key pop fact, I don't think there's a single picture from before 1971.
I'm sure there isn't.
And the second key pop fact is that none of those eight includes either Bill Wyman or Brian Jones.
Oh, so even Bill has been...
There's no sign of Bill and there is no sign of Brian. This is the Rolling Stones. There is one stamp that's entirely Ronnie Wood. Now, no disrespect to Ronnie Wood. He's been in the group since whatever it was, 1975. But it's still... I'm sorry, but if you're a bit old school, you can't think that Ronnie Wood on his own could somehow epitomize...
I think the problem with the Rolling Stones is I don't think they own the bit of the Rolling Stones from which their mystique derives, which is the earliest stuff, really, because that's all owned by ABCO, you know, Alan Klein's company or whatever. You know.
And they wouldn't own those pictures, would they?
Well, possibly not. I don't know. They'd have to go and pay for them or whatever.
Yeah.
Because Brian Jones had left by the time that, you know, because that period finishes, as you say, 1971. When the Rolling Stones start again with the tongue logo and their own label and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I agree with you. It's not the Rolling Stones if you don't have those people in there.
Oh God, the other Rolling Stones thing is, did I send you that clip of, I think I did. Did you get a chance to look at the clip of the Stones' first appearance in Holland in 1964?
Oh, I did.
Oh my
with
Lord.
The bouncers. Oh my God.
We must include it at the end of this because anyone who hasn't seen it really ought to see it. It's really short. It's only about 3 or 4 minutes long. And I think it's taken by a girl who's in the audience. And it's basically their first appearance near The Hague. And it's an old kind of Victorian opera hall. You know, it's a beautiful old theatre. And clearly, you forget, you know, they had no understanding of what a rock and roll concert was going to be like. The Beatles actually had played in Amsterdam, but I checked just a few months before. But before that, none of those kind of, you know, events whereby there was going to be screaming women and hysteria and, you know, and it's just a riot, isn't it? It's a complete riot.
But it's also, it's not just screaming women, isn't it? It's blokes, isn't it?
It's kind of tearing up seats. You look at this thing and there are seats, kind of bits of seats and bits of chairs flying into vision and flying out again.
And the security is provided by it. It's not proper security at all. People who came along fancied a punch-up. And they got one, didn't they?
Yeah. These are guys with suits and ties and they're kind of part of the setup, or they just don't like the youth or whatever. And they're on stage kind of just antagonizing these guys to some extent, aren't they? Pulling about and throwing them back into the crowd and punching them and kicking them. And it's just, it's amazing. And it ends up with a stage curtain being pulled. They have to just abandon the whole thing, the group go off. And they pull across the stage curtain and these police stand there with batons. You remember the end bit? It's fantastic.
Oh, God.
Waiting to kind of, you know, I think very often
it was Scandinavia and Northern Europe was where it really kicked off for the Rolling Stones. I think there are a lot of riots happened at Rolling Stones gigs in the 60s in that part of the world, more than they did in the UK. Listen, I have to ask you. Lucas Hare, friend of the pod, got in touch the other day, and Lucas and Kerry Shale run a very good Bob Dylan podcast called Is It Rolling Bob? And they wanted to know from the expression his Bobness to apply to Bob Dylan, where did it come from? And you thought it was Adrian Devoy, didn't you?
I'm sure it was Adrian Devoy. I think it was when we were at Q, because Dylan had a record act called Oh Mercy in about 1989, I think. Crikey, as we used to call it. Everything on Q just had a different name, just so hilarious.
Crikey.
Red when it was amply fed. You know, we got this, just terribly fun. I don't know why. There was a guy called Carl Wallinger of the group World Party, and he was known as Colin Bollinger. And I don't know why. It's not even particularly funny.
Because he's known as
Colin. Colin.
Sorry, it's funny. It's funny.
It's funny. It's funny. No, it's funny.
And you did a bit of a study of it, didn't you? Yeah. Well, the older you go further, you think it begins with Olivia Neutron bomb.
I think Olivia Neutron bomb. I think that's what started it. That's what I remember as a kid. I mean, it's the early 70s. The people talked about Olivia Neutron bomb, didn't they?
Byron Ferrari.
Byron Ferrari, in the enemy, of course. I think if you wrote Brian Ferry in the copy, the subs would change it to Byron Ferrari. Or someone write it, a.k.a. Byron Ferrari. I think you mean. No, that was amazing. It's smash hits. I mean, can you remember all the ones that smash hits? I can still remember them. Wacky Macca, Thumbs Aloft.
Yes.
Lord Lucan of Mercury.
The Lord Lucan of Mercury.
Yeah.
And the Dame, David Bowie, which has really gone into general currency, hasn't it, the Dame?
It has. It's still there. People refer to him, her, as the Dame, and rightly so, actually. There was Mark, unpronounceable name of Big Country. Do you remember him? Mark Brzezinski, I think his name was. Was he Polish? I think, I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah, there was the leather-lunged songstress.
Who was that? Bonnie Tyler. We ought to maybe quiz some people.
She's also known as the poodle-haired vixstress. Okay, all right. You have to guess who this is then. Volleyball ping pong or Ben Volavon Parrot, rather.
No, Volapolier Piero, wasn't it?
Piero.
Was it from Curiosity Killed the Cat? Was that right? And then, of course, you two were, as we frequently observed on this podcast, you two were known at smash hits as Bobo the Hedge, Larry Mullen Jr. with Junior in inverted commas.
Junior in inverted commas, yeah.
And the other one.
Can you imagine how damning that must have been?
That's very good. Natalie Umbruglia was known as...
Oh, Natalie Umbrella Stand. There was Madge, of course.
That's another one that took off. You see, Madonna, referring to Madonna as Madge.
Madge. No, people call her the tabloids called her Madge. Because it's a shorter version. You can get her on the cover, can't you? Madge.
I suppose that's true. That's true. Clifford of Richard. What's this? Christina Aquilibra.
Christina Aquilibra, yeah. That's after my time.
Aquavita.
Stephen Tital Duffy. Bros were always known as Matt, Luke, and Ken. You remember that? His name was Ken. I actually can't remember his name now.
Craig was known as Craig, wasn't he?
Craig, that's right. Viz picked up on that. They always talked about Ken from Bros.
Billy Idol was who?
Sir Billiam of Idol.
And of course, still in the news today, because she's kind of squabbling with her sister, is Broccoli Spears. And Patsy Kensit was known as Cheesy Watson.
It's just genuinely funny, isn't it? I think they're really, I love those things. And I still maintain that some of that went into kind of common parlance. I went to see QPR in the early 90s with my boys in the days when Les Ferdinand was the big striker. And people used to sing, Sir Leslie Ferdinand, Sir Leslie Ferdinand. And I actually genuinely think that was straight out of Smash Hits, because that was Sir Lord Lucan of Mercury and all that nonsense, wasn't it? Was anyone called Sir before? I don't know if they were. I'd like to think it was Smash Hits.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So listen, the question of the BBC licence fee comes back into focus this week, which it does, you know, regularly from time to time. It's a political football, all those kind of things, and everybody kind of rushes to the barricades, you know. And I just want to make a couple of points about the BBC. And I value the BBC and so forth. And, you know, long may it rain. But there's no point denying... It comprises a smaller percentage of your listening and viewing diet than it did in the past. It's bound to, because there's just more and more stuff. And, you know, frequently I sit there and think, do I ever watch BBC One? No. Do I ever watch BBC Two? Probably not. You know, do I watch BBC Four? Probably not. You know, there's a load of radio services that I used to have to listen to, and I sort of don't, you know, because I access news the way, and that doesn't mean I don't value it and so forth. But what's interesting is how these things change. And, you know, what we also used to say in the world of magazines was there's difference people recognize and there's difference people recognize and value. And the third thing is the most important quality. Yeah. And so it's only recently it struck me that there is a BBC service that I've come to value significantly in the last few years. What would that be, Mark?
The iPlayer?
No, it's CBeebies, because I've got grandchildren.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know what I mean? As soon as you've got grandchildren, something you put on the telly that, you know, is kind of all right, so, you know, it's not going to deprave and corrupt and so forth.
Yeah.
And they're going to quite happily sit and watch it. You know, so my point is that, you know, these services, they suddenly become really important to you at certain points in your life. And another thing, I kind of think that the thing that BBC really should have done, they really missed a trick in not starting Talking Pictures TV.
Completely.
Because Talking Pictures TV, you know what I mean?
Must be sore about
it. It's aimed at older people who quite happily watch old black and white films, and they don't even have to be brilliant. They don't mind. They just like it. It's kind of comforting to sit and watch it.
And familiar people.
And if the BBC did that, I'd think, yeah, okay, that would go into my calculations. You know what I mean? Whereas there's no point telling me how wonderful everything is you're doing on BBC Two, because I probably don't watch it. Because, you know, loads of things are aimed at really general audience. Whereas the stuff that you value tends to be at things that are aimed at you very particularly. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And those things change as you go along, you know. And I'm sure there are loads of people who really value, I don't know, Six Music or Radio 3 or whatever, you know. But it's those things you feel strongly about matter more than those things that you might tolerate. And so much of the argument is about what you might tolerate. And, you know, I just think they ought to think more things that people really feel strongly about. That's my view. So anyway, the Beatles.
Very fair point, and I'm with you on that.
Yeah,
I still can't imagine a world without Radio 4. I have to say.
No, fair enough. And but it probably means that ultimately it's got to be more like hardcore Radio 4, and less like Radio 4 that we can get people to tolerate. You know, because that's the way media works. It's things you want, you really want, rather than things you'll tolerate. You know, because in the past it used to be things you'd tolerate, and now that you've got loads and loads of choices, you choose the thing that you really want, and that's the difficult
but
challenge.
But the BBC still does stuff that nobody else does. You know,
I'm sure.
We were actually listening, in fact, you know, when it was 11 o'clock last night, to Bunk Beds with the great Peter Curran.
Oh, absolutely.
He of this podcast on many occasions. There's Peter Curran and Patrick Marber talking to, I think it's Harry Shearer, and drifting off to sleep, as we were drifting off to sleep, actually.
No.
Where else in the world, the envy of the world, where else would somebody be commissioning a 15-minute programme where three people record genuinely in the dark? They do it in the dark.
The only thing I'm slightly disappointed about, I've always been slightly disappointed about Bunk Beds, is they don't do it lying down.
Oh, I think they do, but they don't do it on bunk beds.
Do they do it lying down?
Oh, I thought they did.
Peter Curran, if you're listening, do you do it lying down? Because I always think it would sound different if you did it lying down. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I'm convinced. But anyway, God bless the BBC.
So, The other burning issue is 2022. Again, is the Beatles. You know, this Get Back and all these things. It continues, you know, unabated, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
Kind of enthusiasm and fascination for this stuff. And there's been a couple of kind of editorials in the last week. I think one of them in the FT. And one of them on Substack, just about is this fascination with, you know, the Beatles in particular and old music in general. Is it a good thing?
Yeah, it's beautifully put. I've scribbled it down and said it's likely that people obsess over the Beatles because there is nothing new around. and there is nothing new around because people obsess over the Beatles. I thought that's a really interesting point. And I don't know what the answer is. But I mean, clearly, in times of trouble, I think a lot of people go back, and particularly with in the Night of Get Back, which was such a massive international event, wasn't it? A Beatles event. Again, who thought that would ever happen? No, but a load of people have gone back to music they just kind of found comforting, you know. But it's interesting, isn't it? Is old music, is it completely, you know, keeping the new music out? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it just, the, you know, a lot of it is just streaming because, you know, if you can stream everything, as we frequently said, everybody has got the same record collection. It didn't used to be the case. 30 years ago, you know, you didn't go to many houses that had a full set of Beatles records or a full set of David Bowie records or anybody. You know what I mean? Whereas everybody now does. So if you're thinking about what to play, are you more likely to play something that was kind of familiar to you than to have a stab at something that you've never tried before? I would suggest most people are more likely to do the former than the latter.
It's just because the latter is just hard work, isn't it? It's a challenge. It might not work out, you know. It's a risk. And you could say the same about the industry, whether the industry want to sign up people who they can't immediately fit into a category that radio will play or whatever. Well,
industry, for years, you know, the record industry is obsessed with novelty. Has been ever since the Beatles. That desperately is all about what's coming out this week. If you go and talk to anybody in a record company, I mean, they're not record companies anymore, music companies or whatever. What are they thinking about? What's coming out this week? That's all their focus is. Whereas actually, how are people, you know, interacting with their products? They're interacting with an incredibly wide range of them, you know, but they don't tend to be terribly interested in that. They're interested in, you know, they're incentivized in, they're focused on, can I break this new thing? And the amount of public enthusiasm for that is a small proportion of the wider enthusiasm than it's ever been before. Because, as we frequently said, who bought records in the 60s? Teenagers. Who bought records in the 70s? Teenagers and people in their 20s. Who bought records in the 80s? Teenagers and people in their 20s and their 30s.
Yeah.
And it moves forward. And so where are we now? Who listened to music? All sorts of people right across the board. You cannot expect it to be dominated by teenagers. It simply won't be any more than football.
It won't be. And also the teenagers, one of those pieces made the point that, you know, in the current list of most downloaded tracks on iTunes, it's full of names from, you know, from the last century, isn't it? It's The Police and it's Creedence Clearwater Revival, you know. And that's not necessarily the people in their 40s and 50s. That's just as likely to be teenage. It's like that argument. If you were 15 now, you could go and listen to something new, or you could discover Joni Mitchell. Yeah. You know, and there's quite difficult decisions, aren't they? There is only so much time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think a lot of this, whenever I hear this argument that the old is driving out the new, I think the argument is that the new feels that it ought to be special. You know, it ought to be kind of prioritized over everything else. And it can't be. It won't be. You know, there will be lots of new music. God, I hate that expression. You know, it sounds so pompous to me.
It does. Sounds as like if, a real effort to be in
as
touch.
If anything that is new is
listening to. Yeah.
Yeah. What should I be listening to?
Yeah.
Whatever you feel like. You know, and it always feels as though it's somehow virtuous. You know, if you listen to loads of new music. New music is whatever you've never listened to before, you know, whatever is new to you. And that's likely to be all kinds of stuff. But it won't have the prestige that it had, I don't think, you know, not in the foreseeable future. But it'll be there. And, you know, God knows there are, you know, people at the absolute top of the game in the world of streaming are making sums of money that their predecessors from 40 years ago could only have dreamed about making, you know.
Yeah.
Because you know, what happens nowadays is, it's like everything in the internet. It's a winner-takes-all business, isn't it? You know, there's a few people at the top making an absolute fortune, and then everybody else is kind of struggling. But there's still no shortage of people trying to join them, you know. There's no indication that there aren't still people making, you know, their own recordings and forming, well, whether they're groups or musical setups.
The opposition is just growing every day, isn't it?
Well, the opposition is whatever you've just done. Yeah, you know, because, you know, you'll be there a year later and there'll be somebody else coming along and you won't want to go away, because what happens in music is nobody goes away, ever.
We've established that, haven't we?
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
All right. Any other business? We're joined by Alex Gold. Alex, you got your Beetle cap on.
I got my Beetle cap on. It's new as well. I upgraded because the last one was too small for my fat head. And what I found was that when I was...
Alex, nothing about you is fat.
Well, thank you. Flattering clothes. But I found that when I wore my wig, it used to poof out at the sides, which is very un-John. So I upgraded to, I think this is extra large, actually, believe it or not.
We should just explain to any occasional listeners that Alex plays the part of John Lennon in a tribute group. Hence, that's why he wears a wig. Otherwise,
It's not. I don't wear a wig in normal life yet, everybody.
No.
Do you know that wonderful Ben Vaughan song called "I Dig Your Wig"?
No, but no. I feel a compulsion to listen to it, to seek it out now.
Your hair's so tall, it's three-dimensional.
Oh, that's good.
That is good.
A bit of poetic license there, isn't it?
But what can be said about that thing on your head? It sure is big. I dig your wig. It's a great, great song.
That's a great lyric.
We were talking about last week or whenever it was about how much you would pay or have paid to see somebody live in concert. Al Hierton got in touch via Patreon. Talking about he went to Kate Bush at Hammersmith Odeon in 2014, as did a number of people, and he tried every way he possibly could to get the more affordable tickets, found that they're all gone, so the only ones he could get were the hospitality tickets, which were 400 of your English pounds each. And he says he doesn't regret it.
I'm sure he didn't. I bet he didn't. Why not? It's only going to happen once in a while. Is Kate Bush ever good? That's the whole thing, is that you're paying to see people who might never tour again.
You see, I mean, put a supplementary question to Al here. How would you feel if she was on tour now? I know nobody's on tour. Back. Well, whatever, you know, people...
She never said it was her last tour, though.
No, she didn't.
Whereas there have been a lot of people who've said, you know, it's the long goodbye, isn't it? And they come back here 2 years later.
Yeah.
Waving the cap about. You know.
Sarah LeClaire got in touch, also via Patreon, from the United States. And she says that COVID, it's the longest she's gone since since she was 13, I think, without seeing The Who. And she misses it badly, you know. And she used to go and see The Who. She regularly paid $500 plus to see them in the past, and it was worth every penny. She would, to see them again, she would mortgage her house and put her 12-year-old son up for sale, which was slightly extreme, but, you know. And, you know, she come back to America, Pete and Roger, take my money, all of it. There's an invitation.
There's devotion.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a simple
critical devotion.
Yeah. So I was asking for questions from people who might have anything they want to put to us, and I'm just desperately scrolling through this stuff on my phone. Please, Bill, here.
Oh, there's one. Hang on, I've got it up in front of me, actually. Keith, Hadley's one was good.
Oh, go on.
About, he says the news that Daniel Radcliffe is playing Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes, that's bizarre.
I know it is, isn't it?
That's bizarre. Go on, what's his question?
Well, that's his question. Is can you think of any castings of musical biopics that would, and major stars who could play them? He says, what about Gary Oldman's Nick Lowe? I thought it was quite good. I'm saying Michael Sheen as Get Back era Paul McCartney.
All right.
Keely Hawes as Kirsty MacColl. Oh. Any of these work for you? Ewan McGregor as Iggy Pop. Richard Gere looks exactly like late period Roger Waters. I think here's my best one.
That's a good one. Richard Gere does look like late period Roger Waters.
Martin Freeman as Noel Gallagher, I think would be good.
Actually, I'm going to go back a second. Can I just, I'm fixated on this. Wasn't Roger Waters on the cover of The Word?
Yeah, he was.
And he looked just like Richard Gere, didn't he?
Unbelievably like Richard Gere. Yeah, I told him so in the interview. He was rather flattered.
I bet he was.
As you would be.
You would be. January Blues says, do you think any fast tempo song has ever been improved by being performed as a ballad? Most of them turn into dirges, in my opinion. I think that's a fair point, actually. I can think of one. I might be able to think of more than one exception, but... I wouldn't say it's a ballad. Go on, Alex. You go first. Go on.
Yeah. So a few years ago, there was a Jam tribute album put together, and loads of different artists were on it. A band called Buffalo Tom did a version of Going Underground, and it was reduced to a half-time kind of ballady type thing. And to my ears, at least, it was magnificent, and it still is. It's really, really, really good. It kind of pulls out a whole new emotion from the song. Right. Huge, huge success, but I can't think of anything else.
The one I was going to suggest was the Cowboy Junkies version of the Velvet Underground Sweet Jane. She's done very, very slowly, and I actually prefer it to the Velvet Underground version of Sweet Jane. But they tend to... You know, if you do something really slowly, what you're saying really is, wow, how poignant is this? Aren't you? You know, there's something in the very...
It's worth savouring.
Yes. There's something slightly, you know, self-important about it.
Yeah.
Any artists you like on record but seen live and thought they were terrible? This is Dave Waters is asking this.
Oh, I saw that. That's the guy who saw The Streets, wasn't it?
He saw The Streets.
I saw The Streets and felt exactly the same because I thought they made great records. They were incredibly boring on stage.
Really?
Yeah. Very disappointing.
Streets, I suppose it's just like Mike Skinner going, I've got some chips.
It is. Exactly that. Well, you don't really need to see him do that. Just stay at home and listen to the record entirely.
You can't kind of increase the... Am I right in this? I'm making this up as I go along. You can't increase the intensity of hip-hop in the live performance arena, can you?
I don't know. No, I don't know. I think it's a different kind of energy. And I think you have to really...
I'm sure the energy comes from the crowd, though, surely.
I think it's a little bit of both. It's very much an exchange. I saw the performance of, the rapper Dave. There's a rapper called Dave, and he played at Glastonbury a couple of years ago. And it was absolutely electric. And I couldn't put my finger on why, because I'm absolutely no expert. That's not my arena. And Stormzy's headline set as well was absolutely fantastic. It felt massively, massively urgent. And I don't know enough about the genre, I don't feel, to be able to comment on why, but it can be done. So, right. But by the same token, I was at Glastonbury when Kanye headlined, and I thought it was a massive disappointment. Right. So,
somebody wanted to know, I can't find their tweet here. They wanted to know how the other Dickens, Mark and I had ever met Alex.
How we met Alex?
Well, he obviously came round to, you know, sweep the chimney.
Please, sir. Spare us a shilling.
A bit more pie.
I was wearing this very
be
hat,
off with
actually.
You, urchin. And we threw some florins at him. After which he scrabbled in the streets.
Apple juice, urchin.
Yeah.
tell, answer the question, Alex, because you know. Go on.
Well, gosh. So I was working for a music marketing company out of uni. Called Upfront Promotions, and I went to get that job because I was working in a strip club and my mom wrote me a letter asking me to get a proper job.
I was working in a strip club.
Yep. It was great for a couple of weeks, but then it got really boring. I wasn't on stage, just to clarify.
What did you do? Just play the piano or something? Or?
No, I poured the pints and got goggled.
This sounds as if it's working its way towards the old joke about, you know, my mother doesn't know I'm in advertising.
Yeah, I tell her I play piano.
She thinks I play piano. Yeah.
It was the world's grossest strip club. It's a place in High Wycombe called the White Horse.
It's a strip club in High Wycombe.
Yeah, yeah. No, horrible little pound in a pot place. It was a strip club by day and a metal venue by night, but. Kings of Leon played their first UK gig there, and there's an interview somewhere where they're being asked what's the worst show they've ever played, and they talk about this horrible hovel somewhere west of London. It's a White Horse. Right. Anyway, my mother, it was the one and only time she's ever written me a letter, and it was a 9-pager, I think, just asking me really sweetly. I've got it somewhere. Yeah. To sort your life out, Alex.
She had nine pages to tell you to get out the strip club.
Well, it's nine pages of A5, but still, yeah. 9 pages, you know. Essentially. So my friend was leaving this job, and he got me an interview, and I got the gig. And part of our thing, we did an awful lot of stuff. We did marketing campaigns for like REM and Green Day and the postering for festivals, and we helped Dave put together and manufacture the Word and Mixmag CDs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one day I was on the bus to a meeting at Beggars Banquet Records, and Jerry Perkins, the MD of Development Hell, gave me a call and said, Alex, would you like to come in house? And we met in a pub. And he gave me a position at Development Hell, and that was it, wasn't it? Really,
I can remember the first morning I met you, and for some reason, you were almost immediately called up Magic Alex.
Oh, I remember you bounded into the office and went, "Oh, Alex, we've got to give you a nickname." And he went, Magic, you're Magic Alex. Like, oh,
you are Magic Alex. I'm sorry, there's nothing you can do about it.
And it stuck to the extent, I feel a bit weird when you call me Alex now. When you don't call me Magic, I feel like I've been...
When we call you Alex, we sound as though we're being a bit stern.
And, I feel like I've been, I'm in trouble,
You've done something wrong. You're reprimanded.
So Jamie Bowman asks, with Mal Evans heralded as the star of Get Back, as he appears to have been, And they're making a film about Mal Evans, aren't they, or something? There's something going on.
Are they? Good idea.
Are there any other band roadies, backroom staff, who deserve their moment in the sun?
Oh, well, they should have a little... they ought to do an edit from the Get Back footage of just Glyn Johns, I think. Glyn Johns has become a bit of a star.
Yeah, but he's not
a manager, no. Richard Cole, I don't know, Peter Grant.
Well, you see, he was talking about road managers, really. And I think it's a good idea, Mal Evans and so forth. But actually, Neil Aspinall, that is the amazing story. Because, and this is not even that long ago, I remember Paul Denoyer telling me the story of Neil Aspinall and you know, was it Pete Beth's mother?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, this is very complicated because it was exactly at the time, because he was involved. Pete was Neil was the kind of the original roadie, and he went on eventually, didn't he? Be
he ran Apple.
You know, he was the custodian of their legacy actually, but he was working for them in the very early days when Pete Best was in the group, and I think Pete Best's mum Mona had a club, didn't she? That used to.
She had a club, and she was quite young.
Casbah, was it
called? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
and she was very attractive,
and she had a bit of a fling with Neil. And in fact, they have a son.
They had a child. They had a child. So Pete Best's half brother, was the son of Neil Aspinall.
Yeah.
You know, how complicated is that?
Yes,
you know, so this is before they. Alex is still trying to compute this. He's trying to work it out, and so you know they before they made it, they've already got that bond, you know, that ties them all together. And Neil Aspinall died, however many years, not that long ago, And ran Apple and knew absolutely. Talk about a man who knew where the bodies were buried. Neil Aspinall, probably more than anybody else in that whole world, probably more than Paul McCartney, probably more than George Martin. He knew absolutely everything, and he never talked about it at all, did he?
And he had the real foresight to realize early on that they should own everything.
Yeah.
Buy up every picture, buy up every tape, buy up every bit of footage and clip, because one day we will build this kind of fantastic.
And then, you know, if you talk about Get Back,
he was right.
If you talk about Get Back, the extraordinary success of Get Back in the last 2 months or whatever, that's Neil Aspinall, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the long view of Neil Aspinall. Guy who was a bookkeeper in Liverpool and a kind of mate of John Lennon and Paul McCartney's, wasn't he? In 1962. It's an absolutely extraordinary story. I'm sure there are loads of kind of roadies and. I was
Derek the Draw from the Blockheads. He finished up being the singer of the group after Ian died. Amazing character.
Yeah. And I had one cross my radar this week, and it's only a minor one, but it's really interesting because I think I met this guy. Is that do you remember Madness? And I think he worked with Nick Lowe. He had a guy called Kellogg's.
Oh yeah, Kellogg's.
You probably knew Kellogg's, didn't you?
No, I never met him, but I've heard a lot about him. Yeah.
Okay, so Kellogg's came from Southend, and because he came from Southend, he was the one of the roadies with Procol Harum. And so I love Procol Harum. And so when Procol Harum recorded A Salty Dog, which is one of my favorite Procol Harum songs in, I think, 1969 or whatever, it features one of these.
Hey!
A bosun's whistle. And who plays the bosun's whistle? Kellogg's.
Does he get a credit?
Kellogg's. He got a credit.
Oh, rightly so.
And he was still kicking around, you know. Well, more than kicking around, he managed Madness and he worked with Nick Lowe and loads of those acts.
Everyone loved him.
They were very much a loved person, you know. So I think there are loads of characters like that over the years. Phil Turner says, Gary Crowley did a Philadelphia International Records mega mix on Saturday Radio last week, presumably. Controversial view, but was Philadelphia International Records a better label than either of the more lauded Motown or Atlantic? Right, I'm
not qualified to answer. I don't think you're going to have to go ahead, Dave, on this one.
I'm going to say no.
No is the answer.
It wasn't.
What, you're saying it's better than Motown?
I think no.
Even I, without much experience with it, quite a lot of experience of Motown, would say that's a very hard mountain to climb.
Yes.
No, that's not going to wash. Sorry.
Yeah, the Philadelphia International flourished for a brief period of time. Atlantic flourished for an awful long time.
Yeah.
Across many many different eras, as did Motown, you know.
Anyway,
we're all entitled to our opinions. What else has been happening? You know, if you're aware of the fact that we're doing this effectively by candlelight, that means that you're watching this rather than just listening to it.
I've genuinely got a lighted candle behind me, actually, because we're doing it at night.
Yeah, we're doing it at night, which is unusual.
For lots of reasons, Alex flying off abroad tomorrow, we're doing it at night, and so it's a different vibe.
So if you're watching it, you're probably one of our much-valued Patreon supporters, and if you'd like to watch it in the future and be one of our most valued Patreon supporters, if you go to patreon.com/wordinyourear, you can find out details about how you might do that and how you could potentially, you know, we could join you for on the occasion of your birthday, as we've done in the last week, I think, with a couple of people, I think. What else has been going on in the last week? We talked to Curtis Tigers.
It was really good. I don't know if that's up yet. It's up for patrons, but that's terrific. What a likable guy.
He's just
what a funny and interesting.
He just reminded me. I couldn't help thinking this. I tweeted this that, you know, when you know, back in the days when you used to go to interview people all the time, and you come back to the office and people would say, what was he like or she like or whatever? And the highest compliment you can ever pay anybody was saying, very good value. Actually.
Good value.
Very good value.
Good value is a great expression. It means they're really good fun, but also it's got some commercial potential. Yes. Good value means they said something so funny, we're going to put it on the cover. It's going to sell a few copies.
Yeah. And there were not too many ums and ahs and so forth.
Yeah.
And Curtis Stigers was absolutely fantastic value, wasn't he, Alex?
Really good. I tell you, he was good value too. It was Chris Heath. We talked to our old pal, Chris Heath. We met in the early days. God, he told some good stories about smash hits too. Yes. Chris now lives in America, and people will be very aware of his fantastic journalism. You know, Rolling Stone and American GQ, and he wrote those great Pet Shop Boys books, and he just tells some really funny stories and has sensational hair.
Who else have we talked to recently? Richard Williams? Richard Williams.
Richard Williams, the wonderful, wonderful journalist, great hero of mine. And he told one absolutely priceless story about the Rolling Stones. He was the usher at a Rolling Stones
concert
played in Nottingham. And he had to be an usher in his school uniform. And he said his job was to stand behind Charlie Watts and spend a lot of the time pulling girls off Charlie Watts, girls that he knew from school.
in his school uniform
with his tie on. Yeah. Very funny.
That was before cool was the rule.
Yeah.
So, you know, all this wealth of material is available to you in full, in living color, and early, very often, if you're a Patreon supporter. So, you know, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear and find out how you could do that. Anything you'd like to add, Alex, before you go to the sea?
Be excellent to each other.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. acast.com.